Aren't we lucky? This week, a little over half of the announced candidates for the Republican nomination for president will convene in Cleveland for what will be the first of more than a dozen debates. And that's only on the Republican side. So far, the Democrats, only three running, maybe that's why there are so few, but they've only scheduled six. In addition to more than 20 debates, the American public will be bombarded by billions of dollars in advertising, most of it in the form of attack ads, trying to convince us that some one candidate or party will take us all to the promised land, the American dream. Unfortunately, according to a recent CNN poll, more than half of Americans believe that the American dream is dead or dying. Fewer and fewer Americans believe the American dream is possible, and with good reason. A declining faith in the American dream has gone hand in hand with the stagnation of wages and, in turn, the shrinking of the middle class. In recent years, more than half of all Americans have had to cut back in some form just in order to pay their rent or cover their mortgage payment. Add to all of this the fact that the richest 1% of the population now own or control more than 99% of the stock market. And that includes all of you who have funds and mutual funds and so forth. The richest ones control 99%. 63% of the respondents said that most children will grow up to be worse off than their parents, according to a recent CNN poll. Unfortunately, there is no simple answer to the cultural and economic problems that plague us. But what I want to do this morning is just chip away at one of the myths that I believe icebergs that block our way and contribute to the income disparity in our country, but is also one of the primary weapons being used to keep the poor poor and make the rich richer. Now, I'm not an economist, and what I know about economics would fill maybe one short chapter of a chapbook. I'll leave that to smarter people than I. But I want to look briefly at the myth of the self-made, and it is the self-made man, although they're now talking about the myth of the self-made man or woman, because there are a couple of people running for president who think they're self-made, who are women, particularly the one on the Republican side, but I won't tell you anything about that. How I believe that the perpetuation of both that myth and the resultant income disparity that exists largely because of that myth may be one of the final nails in the coffin of the American economy. To put it briefly, we need to get away from the myth of the self-made man or self-made woman. We need to stop telling people to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. We need to quit lying. Most poor people in this country, no matter how hard they work, how diligently they apply themselves, will never be rich. Going it alone, no matter how hard they work, will never be enough to overcome poverty for the majority of Americans. Stories about Ben Franklin, John Rockefeller, Frederick Douglass, Ray Kroc, and Abraham Lincoln have all been cited as Americans who made it alone, who pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps. Even Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas has been cited as someone who made it on his own. I invite you to read his biography just in case you really believe that. The concept may have been useful in the past to encourage people and industry among the American people, but every one of these individuals and others like them had help. The concept of the self-made person has been so abused and overused so as to make it our enemy, not our friend. Some of the wealthiest entrepreneurs in North America say there is no such thing as a self-made man. With more millionaires making rather than inheriting their wealth, there's a false belief that they made it on their own. think about what the average minimum wage was when I was growing up. My first job was 85 cents an hour, and I was ahead of a lot of people. A new report published by the Boston-based nonprofit United for a Fair Economy writes, "The myth of self-made wealth is potentially destructive to the very infrastructure that enables wealth creation." We're shooting ourselves in the foot. The individual profiled in the report believed they prospered in large part due to things beyond their control and because of the support of others. I've already mentioned Warren Buffett. Eric Schmidt of Google says lots of people who are smart and work hard and play by the rules don't have a fraction of what I have. I realize I don't have my wealth because I'm so brilliant. Even Michael can't row the boat alone. More to the point, I think America is in the wrong boat. And if I were a naysayer, and sometimes I am, I might say we are sinking. We are fighting the wrong enemy. Yes, ISIS, terrorism around the world, genocide, and all of the other things that are going on in the world are problems to be addressed. But I don't think they're America's biggest enemy. For us, I think we need to go back to Walt Kelly. How many of you don't remember Walt Kelly? Some of you don't. Some of you do. Okay. You all remember him. For those of you under 40, and there are a few, and maybe a few older than that, let me remind you. Walt Kelly was a cartoonist whose most famous cartoon character was a possum in the Okefenokee Swamp, a possum named Pogo. One of the last and most quoted sayings of Pogo came from the battle against environmental pollution in the Okefenokee Swamp. Pogo went out to fight the battle, and he came back with the now well-known saying, "We have met the enemy, and he is us." I think our biggest enemy is us. The American people are being fed a constant diet of poison, a diet consisting of the myth of the self-made man and the myth of meritocracy, topped off with the cherry on top of the poison dessert, the myth of trickle-down economics. In our reading earlier, we heard the ideas of a self-made man and the meritocracy of the American system described as the notion that anyone can be wealthy and make it to the top by virtue of their hard work and positive attitudes, and that's how successful people did it in the past. They are, to say the least, false or at least outmoded myths. I believe that the perpetuation of these myths and the subsequent economic disparities that have fostered have put our country in a deeper danger than ISIS or Russia or any of the other political entities of the world. Whatever our outside hostile forces in the world can pose are not as risky as us holding on to this mythology that somehow we can all get rich if we just work hard enough. By virtue of every measure taken by Stephen McNamee and Robert Miller of the University of North Carolina, America is no longer a middle-class country. We are no longer a middle-class country. Here are just a couple of examples of what's happening. In 1980, the richest 1% of Americans took one of every $15, or just under 7% of the total. 1% took 7% of the total. 30 years later, this same 1% was 3 out of every $15, or 1 out of every $5, 20% of the total. And as I mentioned, 1% of stocks and 1% of profits from the stock market are made by 99% of us, and 1%, the rest of the 1% controls all of the rest of the wealth. Now, Income inequality sped up during the recession, as we all know. Even during the worst of the past several years, the wealthiest 5% saw their incomes rise. If you're sitting at the top of a major Fortune 500 company, too bad, your income only went up 5% per year during the recession. But the bottom 20%, if you're one out of five near the bottom, saw their income and purchasing power decline. They had less money at the end of the recession than they had going in. And the so-called jobs growth of the past 20 years have been disproportionately in the low-income sector. Author Bruce Johnson is just one of many people who have pointed out that the increase in income disparity threatens our nation with increasing mental illness and social problems. Increasing mental illness and social problems. Where America was seen as the land of opportunity, the hope of the world after World War II, we are dropping in measures of well-being. What looking at variables of health, wealth, and education, the University of Leicester psychologist Adrian White found that now the United States ranks 23rd in these measures of well-being. Denmark ranks first, Switzerland second, and our neighbor to the north, Canada, is 10th, and we rank 23rd. For all those who claim to have made it alone, to be self-made men and women, we need to recall the words of Isaac Newton. If I have seen farther than others, it is because I stand on the shoulders of giants. My belief is that the myth of the self-made man, the myth of meritocracy in this democracy, and the horror of the increasing income distribution gap in our society are doing more to destroy our country than all of the wars we ever fought. Here we are trying to figure out how to extricate ourselves from Afghanistan, while at the same time, they are destroying the very land they all fought for from within. The immorality of this age is not marijuana, or drugs, or sexuality, or sexual preference. It's not women's choice. It's not a lot of things that a lot of politicians would like us to think is the problems in our country. What I believe is the immorality of our age is the immorality of the sons of Adam and the sons of Abraham. We, like they, have forgotten that we are responsible for our brothers and sisters. We need a new myth. It's time to relearn the lesson of Cain, the lesson that the elder brothers of Joseph had to learn. Yes, we are our brothers and sisters' keepers. As you drive through the streets of Hendersonville, realize that everyone you pass out there is somebody for whom you have responsibility as a member of this society. No, I don't want you to stop your car on the curb and hand somebody a dollar. That's not going to do it. But be active. Take care of your vote. Take care of your politicking. Take care of what you teach your family. The myths of the self-made man and meritocracy. You all know what a meritocracy is, right? The idea that the people who work the hardest get the farthest ahead. Bunk. Not true. Now, that doesn't mean we have to stop working hard. It doesn't mean that we have to not take advantage of opportunities presented to us. But it does mean that there are thousands, even millions of Americans out there who work every bit as hard as we do. And they're not as well off as we are. This is getting away from money for a minute, and my wife will forgive me if I tell a story I've told a few times about her. Some of you know that Eileen was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in the 1980s. Almost at the very same time, a young woman down the street was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Now, Eileen has always been, you know, fairly fit. She walks, she works around, she took care of six kids at one time or another. She had a lot to do, and she took care of herself. She watched her diet. But so did Sybilla. And Sybilla was in such good shape that she was an underwater photographer for the National Geographic Society. She could swim better than most of us can walk. For whatever reason, Eileen, as you see her today, is better off than she was 15 years ago. For whatever reason, in a very short number of years, Sybilla had died. They were both diagnosed by the same professionals having multiple sclerosis. And if you ask Eileen, you can ask her, oh, is it diet? Is it exercise? Do you pay attention to your doctors? And yes, she does all those things. But the answer of hers that I like the best, and the one that I think we need to consider, is there's no answer. It's grace. It's grace. We can't take credit for that. We can't take credit for those good things. Unfortunately, our society is more reminiscent of Marie Antoinette's Let Them Eat Cake than it is of Ben Franklin's We Must Hang Together or We Will Hang Separately. Revolutionary War hero John Dickinson reminded us that united we stand, divided we fall, and we actually used to use this slogan in the United States. Somewhere, it's come to be associated with a fringe element of we are united and you can't overcome us, instead of we take care of each other. We need to apply these things to our daily lives as surely as the Good Samaritan applied it to caring for his enemy. When today's politicians encourage people to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, we need to remember that the phrase was probably created by Baron von Munchausen to mean doing the impossible. It was considered physically impossible for anyone to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. And the only time I've ever seen somebody who really could do something like that, they had to use a ladder. As we listen to the political speeches and the rhetoric, we need to be reminded virtually everyone alive today has someone beneath them on whose shoulders he or she stood. The myth of the self-made man is just that, a false myth. Some people look and say, well, what about Donald Trump? What about him? You like to laugh at political debates, or laugh in horror, maybe. Anyway, Donald Trump didn't do anything that wasn't given to him to start with. His father gave him huge real estate holdings, and he happened to make $1 billion or more with those real estate holdings. What we need is a new myth. We need to learn the lesson of Cain. Someone, somewhere on those podiums this debate season will refer to someone as if they are a self-made man. They pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps. They did it themselves. But if we understand that every one of those people has support of mentors, parents, friends, partners, workers, their achievements would not have been possible without the infrastructure of modern legal, political, and economic institutions. Their achievements would not have been possible without the cumulative contribution of men and women to scientific and technical progress. Eileen and I sometimes laugh about people who claim they are self-made. They made it on their own. They got to the top on their own. They went to college on the GI Bill. To anyone who's inclined to say to another person, if I did it, you can do it, be careful. We need to ask who taught us along the way and ask if we are willing to help teach someone else. A lot of people who resent giving anyone a handout need to learn that they have been given a hand up many times. Comic actress Amy Poehler recently treated the graduating seniors from Harvard to a stream of jokes, as befits Amy Poehler, assumed accents, and perfectly timed punchlines centered on Harvard's reputation. What I have discovered, she said, is this. You can't do it alone. The message was partly about humor, but also about humility. As you navigate through the rest of your life, be open to collaboration. Other people and other people's ideas are often better than your own. We need to create a culture in which exchange of ideas and helping other people is the norm, not the exception. You oftentimes will see on a television broadcast, they broadcast some unfortunate person, a young boy who had to have his two hands amputated because of an illness. Servicemen who came back with injuries and are quadriplegics or paraplegics. And when the news media does it right, hundreds of thousands of dollars pour in to those stations to help those people. What we need to realize is that there is everyone around us in the same boat. As you navigate through the rest of your life, she said, be open to collaboration. Other people and other people's ideas are often better than your own. I think this is a primary function of the church. Is so that we can exchange ideas with each other, not to make converts, but to share what we have learned in the event that it might help them. No one is here today, Amy Poehler said, because they did it on their own. This is to the Harvard graduates. You are all here today because someone gave you strength, helped you, held you in the palm of their hand. God, Allah, Buddha, Lady Gaga, whomever you pray to. We need to learn again what Jesus taught, that for the one to whom much is given, much is required.